Welcome to each and every one of you this evening. We trust that the things that we have to say this evening will be beneficial to all of us. We're kind of following a daily theme that is just for today, emphasizing this subject of faithfulness, as I believe that from a large perspective, from a big picture, our goal for 2020, as it should have been for every year, is to be faithful, to grow more faithful, and to be stronger, and to be able to be more consistent, I guess, is what I want to say, with our faithfulness. So I want us to look at the life of, or the prophecy of a man, Habakkuk. In your Bibles, three chapters of the book of Habakkuk, and I want to talk about what he has to say, what it indicates about him, and how he, shall we say, weathers the storm of the time in which he lives. Most likely this prophecy took place in the early years of the reign of Jehoiakim. Jehoiakim, as you remember, was the son of Josiah. And Josiah, you'll remember his life. Josiah was the last good king. We have that way of identifying kings. He's a good king, he's a bad king. He's a good king, he's a bad king. Josiah was the last of the good kings. And there was a promise made to Josiah by God that while turmoil was coming, God's wrath was going to be demonstrated in the future. He promised Josiah, you will not be here when that happens. You'll not have to endure that. You'll be gone. And he was killed in a battle at 609, I believe, B.C. We know that the first captives went in about 605 B.C. So somewhere between Josiah and the first captivity, I think, would be about when this book was written. You could put it somewhere between 609 and 605, I suppose, according to my miscalculations at least, and everybody has their own calculations on these things, so it's not important that we try to narrow it down to a year. But what we do know is that Habakkuk was speaking about the injustices that were taking place in Judea at the time. And he was upset about it. And he was calling to God to do something about it. Now Habakkuk's name is kind of a little tidbit, but it means to embrace. Literally the name means to embrace. And it seems that when you read this book, it seems that Habakkuk embraced both his people and his God. And yet, there's a problem with his people. And so, the book says the oracle which Habakkuk the prophet saw, and so the oracle, obviously the burden in some of your translations, I think it may say, because that's what oracle means, was a rather weighty message that Habakkuk was having to receive and deal with as he spoke with God and was spoken to by God. And so what is this weighty message? And I want us to read verses 1 through 4 of chapter 1. The oracle which Habakkuk the prophet saw, how long, O Lord, will I call for help, and you will not hear? I cry out to you, violence, yet you do not save. Why do you make me see iniquity, and cause me to look on wickedness? Yes, destruction and violence are before me. Strife exists and contention arises. Therefore the law is ignored, and justice is never upheld, for the wicked surround the righteous. Therefore justice comes out perverted. New American Standard Version there. You may have said a little different wording, but essentially, Habakkuk calls out to God and says, why do you, a just God, endure this injustice that is taking place in our land? And he is obviously dealing with as I mentioned earlier, Jehoiakim, who was a very weak and evil king, and had not the character or the will to stand up and hold up God's law. And so Habakkuk says, I want to know. I want you to answer me. And I think it's fair for us to say at this juncture that Habakkuk's just like you and me in that sense. When I see injustice, boy, I'm bold to call it out. I'll let them know it's unjust. But the issue I have is that I have my own kind of perspective on what justice is if I'm not careful. And therefore, I don't have innate righteousness as God does. And Habakkuk doesn't either. And he's looking at a situation and he's saying, God, I want you to fix Judah. I live here and these people are evil. I want you to straighten them out for me so I can live in this land I love with the people I love with them doing the right thing. That's really what he's saying. Well, he gets his answer, doesn't he, from God. God answers him. And in verses 5 through 11, God tells Habakkuk, yeah, I'm going to do something about it. But see, Habakkuk is like we are. He doesn't understand God's plan. God is omniscient, and he has this plan we're unaware of. We don't know all the details. And Habakkuk doesn't either. And so what does God tell him in verses 5 through 11? Bad news, Habakkuk. I'm going to fix your problem. I'm going to send those evil Chaldeans down here, and they're going to fix you up. They're going to take your people away from here, and they're going to punish them according to my desires. Yes, I'm going to deal with injustice, and I'm going to deal with it my way. Because it is within the big picture of what I have in mind that these people be punished with the captivity that I'm going to send their way. And so Habakkuk is calling for something. He's wishing for something. Be careful. Well, we have the expression, don't we? Be careful what you wish for. It may come true. Well, it's coming true for him. And so look at, if you will, at verses 12 and 13 of chapter 1. Because after God has explained to Habakkuk, I'm going to send the Chaldeans down there and we'll fix this problem in a hurry. He says to God, are you not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? We will not die. You, O Lord, have appointed them to judge. And you, O Rock, have established them to correct. Your eyes are too pure to approve evil, and you cannot look on wickedness with favor. Why do you look with favor on those who deal treacherously? Why are you silent when the wicked swallow up those more righteous than they? And so he says, essentially, to God, how can you, the everlasting God, use a nation like Babylon to punish Judah? What's the expression he uses? Why are you silent when the wicked swallow up those more righteous than they? Now, how many times have we tried to teach ourselves that what may appear to be greater sin to us is still just sin to God? And so God doesn't look at sin, as far as his wrath is concerned, as one greater than the other. And he punishes sin and rewards righteousness. But yet Habakkuk's view is, we may be an unjust people as a nation here, Judah, but we are at least your people, God, and you're bringing in people that aren't your people who are worse than we are to fix the problem. So how can you do that? And then he raises a question throughout the rest of that chapter by, do you plan to let Babylon just go on conquering and destroying nations and people without ever putting an end to that. And so justice is kind of hard sometimes for mankind to fathom because of what I just mentioned, and that is our perspective may not match God's. And we may not understand His total plan, and therefore what appears to be harshness or impropriety on the part of God isn't at all. It's greater wisdom that He has that we do not have. And so Habakkuk has this question to God. How can you use this evil nation to correct our problems of sin and evil in Judah? So here's God's answer. First of all, in the first verse of chapter 2, Habakkuk says this, I will stand on my guard post and station myself on the rampart, and I will keep watch to see what he will speak to me and how I may reply when I am reproved. So Habakkuk is, I kind of fell in love with this little book when reading it, because Habakkuk has a lot in common with Job, except for the physical maladies and so forth. But he has a lot of the same mentalities that Job has. We've been talking about this for some time, and it's difficult for us to sit here in nice clothing, on padded pews, in a heated building, driven here in nice vehicles. We've had it pretty nice today. And it's hard for us to put ourselves sometimes in the position of someone like Job or even Habakkuk, who now looks at this situation. But Habakkuk does say, even after God has told him, I'm sending Babylon over there, and they're gonna straighten this thing out. They're gonna bring my punishment on you. So Habakkuk says, okay, I'm still gonna stand here. I'm gonna stand my post, and I'm gonna keep watch to see what he will speak to me and how I may reply when I'm reproved. Then the Lord said to me, verse 2, and said, record the vision and inscribe it on tablets. Okay, excuse me. Habakkuk, you are going to be a messenger now. So you're going to communicate what I'm giving you to others. So I want you to record it and preserve it so you can communicate it accurately, that the one who reads it may run. Let me read that verse again. Then the Lord answered me and said, record the vision, inscribe it on tablets, that the one who reads it may run. What does that remind you of? If Habakkuk is preparing a message to his people so they can run, almost sounds like the destruction of Jerusalem, doesn't it? But whatever, incidental little piece of information there just comes to mind when you read that. But then he says this, for the vision is yet for the appointed time. This is a definite thing. This is not something I'm thinking about doing. This is something I've already planned. It hastens toward the goal, and it will not fail. Though it tarries, wait for it will certainly come. It will not delay. Then in verse 4, this is Habakkuk. There are two verses in the book of Habakkuk that are just resonate with you for the rest of your life when you read them carefully. And this is one. He says, behold, as for the proud one, his soul is not right within him, but the righteous will live by his faith. Now we see that, I can think of four times right off the top of my head in the New Testament, that we see that phrase appear. That is a phrase that God explained to Habakkuk. You want to know how you endure this? You want to know how you withstand this awful thing that's going to happen to your nation? You keep your faith, because the righteous man will live by his faith. The unrighteous man will use his faith, but it will fluctuate and it will waver and it will leave him from time to time. And so it is that God speaks of Babylon as not being the upright. They're the ones that are not upright. But the righteous man, those of Judah who are not the unrighteous ones, who are not the ones practicing injustices and being unfair to their neighbors, those righteous people shall live by faith. And so this is a central theme, of course, to the life of Habakkuk, because he's facing terror. He's facing a very, very difficult thing. And now he has to essentially buttress his soul with his faith in God. Now in the rest of chapter 2 then, he begins to talk about the evils of Babylon and how they are going to eventually fall. They're just being used as God's tool to punish Judah for her sin. And so in verse 5 he talks about they're drunk with wine, and power takes for its appetite. They get drunk with wine, and they have enough power, they have the military now, and so they take things, they capture, they put people in bondage to satisfy their appetite. And then he gives a series of woes concerning Babylon. Woe to him who selfishly takes what is not his. Now listen to how all these things are the very, very epitome of injustice. Woe to him who selfishly takes what is not his. Verses 6 through 8. Woe to him who gets evil gain for his house. 9 through 11. Woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed. Verses 12 through 14. Woe to him who deceives his neighbors with drink so that he can expose them. Verses 15 through 17. And then he says, woe to him. Well, let me hold off on that last woe. I want to mention something in between this and the last woe. In verse 16, I want us to look at verse 16 of chapter 2, he says, you will be filled with disgrace rather than honor, speaking of Babylon. Now you yourself drink and expose your own nakedness. The cup in the Lord's right hand will come around to you. What's that expression we have? What goes around comes around? That's what he's saying to Babylon. He said, yeah, you're going to do this, but in the future, you'll get yours, I guess is another way of saying it. The cup of the Lord's hand will come around you, and utter disgrace will come upon your glory. So that is what he warns Babylon. Now he directs his attention to Babylon's idolatrous nation, as he's using an idolatrous nation to punish his people for going into idolatry. Strange. But he says in verse 19, let's look at verse 19, chapter 2. Woe to him who says to a piece of wood, awake. To the mute stone, arise. And that is your teacher? Behold, it is overlaid with gold and silver. There is no breath at all inside it. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. Sorry, Ron, I was going to have you lead that song before the lesson, but... but that's the second verse in the book of Habakkuk that just has eternal implications. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the world keep silence before him. Think about that when you hear people say things. When Ron did our class this morning, some of the most blasphemous things you can imagine were spoken in that booklet by men who are atheists and are trying their dead level best to discredit anything to do with the Bible. And some very, very blasphemous statements were made by them And I think we need to be aware of that. And when we hear that coming in society, it'd be nice to remember Habakkuk 2:20. Because they can say what they want. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never harm me, because the Lord is in His holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before Him. So that's what he tells Habakkuk, to stabilize, if you will, his feelings and his ability to cope with what he's about to face. So God's answer is that while he's going to use Babylon to judge Judah, he's not going to let them go. I mean, this is not God changing. What's Hebrews 13 tell us? That Jesus Christ the same today, yesterday, today, and forever. So God doesn't change. He stays the same. And he's going to stay the same. So he's not altering in favor of an idolatrous nation like Babylon. No, he's simply using them to punish his own people who have become idolatrous. It's a temporary thing. And so what Habakkuk needs to teach his brethren is that the just shall live by faith. Trust God. All will be well. The third chapter of the book of Habakkuk is a prayer, essentially. He prays that God will remember mercy as he carries out his judgment, verses 1 and 2. Prayer of Habakkuk the prophet, according to Shigionoth. Lord, I have heard the report about you, and I fear. O Lord, revive your work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. Please be merciful, Father, upon us as you deal with our problem using this awful nation, Babylon, to punish us. In verses 3 through 15 of chapter 3, Habakkuk praises God. And he praises him essentially for two things. And that is, he praises him because God has all power. And he has all authority. And he is the great God of heaven. And yet at the same time, he's able, because of that, to bring salvation to his people on one hand, and judgment to his people on the other hand. Judgment against evil, whether it be his people or others. Habakkuk actually trembles with fear, but he pledges his loyalty to the God of heaven. I want to read for you verses 16 through 17 of chapter 3. 16 through 19, I'm sorry. I heard and my inward parts trembled at the sound, my lips quivered. Decay enters my bones, and in my place I tremble, because I must wait quietly for the day of distress, for the people to arise who will invade us. Though the fig tree should not blossom, and there be no fruit on the vines, though the yield of the olive should fail, and the fields produce no food, though the flock should be cut off from the fold, and there be no cattle in the stalls, yet I will exult in the Lord. I will rejoice in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength, and he has made my feet like hind's feet, and makes me walk on my high places. What that says is that Habakkuk understands that in matters of importance, in matters eternal, we trust in God, because those are the things that matter the most. And God is loyal and faithful to those who trust in Him. So what do we conclude when we study the book of Habakkuk? Well, one of the things that is interesting is the number of times the phrase, the just shall live by faith, appears in the New Testament. We're not going to look at all of those, but I want to look at a couple of them. In Romans, the first chapter, in verses 16 and 17, Paul says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel, for it's the power of God unto salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, but the righteous man shall live by faith." And so I submit to you that, first of all, we learn this principle, the righteous man shall live by faith, when we obey the gospel, when we hear the gospel of Jesus Christ preached, and we recognize and understand the eternal nature of our lives, faithful or unfaithful, and that there is a hope for us in this Savior, Christ Jesus. But it requires us to quit trusting ourselves, to quit trusting others, to quit trusting in the world, and to put our trust in God, to have our faith in God. We can be righteous if we trust in Him and if our faith is in Him. And so then we go over to Hebrews, the 10th chapter, and we look at verses 35 through 39 in Hebrews 10. And he begins here in verse 35, "Therefore do not throw away your confidence, which has a great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. For in yet a very little while, he who is coming will come and will not delay. But my righteous one shall live by faith, and if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul." And so we next see this phrase used when it talks about our need to trust God as we endure trials and tribulations, just like Habakkuk did. And so, by the way, just a mental note for you. I don't know if you things like this bug you, but I looked at this quotation in the New American Standard, and it said, "But my righteous shall live by faith." And then, still in the quotation, it says, "If he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him." And I couldn't find that anywhere until I got my Septuagint out and looked in it. And it reminded me that many, Jesus always quotes the Septuagint. And many of the early writers quoted the Septuagint. That was their version of the Bible that they relied upon. And so that appears in the Septuagint. Just give you a little note there. You'll be way ahead of your next teacher in the book of Hebrews when you get it. But it is important for us to understand, to see these people who live in these times when they're close physically, not only to God, but to the works that He has demonstrated among them. And they see that. And they have seen the great things God has done for them. And now, the time of reckoning comes. And they see what God must do, the faithful. They understand God has to purify them, if you will, by bringing His wrath upon them. And after all, isn't that what Romans 12 tells us? That vengeance belongs to the Lord? It's not ours to take vengeance. Habakkuk was crying out because of the unjust people that he lived among. But there was nothing for him to do about it except call out to God and pray to God and let God take care of it, because vengeance belongs to God, not to him. And so men of faith endured Babylon in captivity. They endured the destruction to Jerusalem. And in between those two, they endured many evil governors of one type or another as the little piece of land over there that we hear him talk about so much today. Even back in the day, the Ptolemies would have it one time, and the Seleucids would have it another time, and they're back and forth and back and forth, and finally the Maccabees rose up and said, we'll take it ourselves, and they just had fighting on every front over the right to govern themselves from the time of Habakkuk up until the time of Christ. And so there's so many people who serve as an example to us that live in much greater difficult times, more difficult times than we do, for us to understand that, yes, we look at our nation, we think it's going downhill fast, we worry about it, we fret about it, because we've got children, grandchildren, people who are going to live in this nation, and we want it to be a decent place for them to live their lives. But the decent place for them to live their lives is in covenant relationship with God, and they simply need to trust in Him, and their lives will be okay. They may have difficulties. Someone may look at Habakkuk's life and say, that wasn't a great life. Had some difficulties, but it was a great life, because it was a life that was lived faithful to God. Maybe those here this evening who need to reinforce your faith. Maybe you don't need anything to do anything publicly. Maybe you need to do it at home in your closet. But wherever or whatever needs to be done, you and I need to take our stand. We need to be people of faith. And that doesn't mean that we're members of the church. It makes us members of the church, but it means that we trust God. In all the things that we encounter, we trust God. Who knows what we'll experience in 2020? There may be some sitting in this audience, don't want to get maudlin on you, but maybe some of us standing here or sitting here are not here in January 2021. That can happen. But if we are people of faith, we'll be in a better place. We'll be all right. Regardless of what happens to this country, this church, or this neighborhood, or anything around us, our faith, the righteous shall live by faith. Faith will allow us to live. I encourage you to respond to the Lord's invitation if that's what you need as we stand and sing the song.